Hi, I'm Kelly Corrigan. You've probably never heard of me. Maybe you did. I wrote some New York Times bestsellers. I gave a TED Talk. But the reason I'm in your ear now is to invite you to listen to Kelly Corrigan Wonders. We talk to everyone from Bono to Amy Schumer, Spike Lee to Rainn Wilson, Krista Tippett and Bryan Stevenson about purpose, creativity, well-being, and what makes life worth living. Follow and listen to Kelly Corrigan Wonders on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to The Dave Glover Show, sponsored by Michael's Flooring Outlet, the flooring experts. IGotFloor.com.
Merry Christmas.
This is the DGS.
It is the DGS here on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
On KMOX, no, DGS. It's no. Hancock and Kelly sitting in for the DGS.
We're here for the next 4 hours with all of you, joined by Brad Young, Chris Ranji, and John Hancock Jr.
How was your day, guys?
Great.
We had a great show.
We had fun today. Yeah,
was it okay? A lot of fun.
Yeah, you know we work on holidays.
So do we. We're the Hancock and Kelly team. We're here every holiday.
We are the Professor and Marianne of KMOX.
Doesn't it feel sometimes like we're the only ones who care?
Yeah. That's pretty much the case.
Just care.
So does that make this a HKS Hancock and Kelly show?
Yeah.
The DGS?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I never thought of it.
Well, we got all of you people in here, so.
All of you people.
Yeah, we love all of you people. Ron, how long have you been here, Ron?
Oh, this station or today?
Yeah, this station.
3 years. No, 2022. May. Yeah, a little over 2.5.
All right. And Brad, you've been doing this now for a decade, right?
I first came on KMOX in the year 2000.
Oh, wow.
Ooh.
Wow. That's impressive.
That's right after I interned here, like a year or two later.
Now, you were in college at the time.
Yeah.
At Illinois State.
That's right.
You got this was your big break.
My huge break.
Getting at KMOX. Were you in the sports department?
I was. Dan McLaughlin was the sports guy at the time.
Wow.
So I would come in on weekends and, you know, he'd let me go to Bush and cover games. And
Jacober was still here then?
He was, but I never saw him.
Oh, okay.
I would see McLaughlin. I would see Randy
Character.
Every now and then.
Yeah.
I think only a couple of times. Saw Jack Buck walk into the office. That was awesome.
That would be pretty awesome. Yeah.
He walked in, and so I never went in. Dan just had me come in on weekends, so I was never there on like a Monday. But this one time I was for some reason. So I'm there on a Monday, and I'm sitting in the office with one of the other sports interns, and we're just both there waiting for somebody to come and tell us what to do.
Yeah.
Because I think nobody had gotten there yet. And Jack Buck walks in, and he comes in, and I, you know, like my heart starts racing because, oh my God, that's Jack Buck.
Yeah.
And he sits down in a chair next to me, and he picks up a newspaper, and he starts reading it, and he doesn't say anything to me. And I'm like, well, I'm not going to talk to him. He's got to talk first. So after a few seconds, he puts the paper down. He goes, I'm Jack Buck, you know, and I was like, oh, hey, I'm Chris. And I think I said my last name, too. And he went back to reading the paper and a couple of seconds go by and he goes, Ranji, what the hell kind of name is that? And I'm like, I don't know, man. It's French. And that was it. And then Randy showed up sometime after and the two of them started talking about football. They were talking NFL, and I thought, this is the coolest thing ever.
Yeah.
Wow. I'm listening to them talk sports.
Welcome to KMOX.
Yeah, it was great.
So I, first time I ever met Mr. Buck, it was an opera theater fundraiser, Opera Theater St. Louis, you know, fundraiser gala thingy. And they were performing Scott Joplin's Treemonisha, which is the opera that Joplin wrote.
Yeah.
And so they'd asked me to come play ragtime at this dinner before we all went over to the show, and Jack Buck was there. And so I stood in line, and I had met like the president, you know, a couple of presidents over the course of my life, and meeting Jack Buck, I was speechless.
Yeah.
And I said, Mr. Buck, and I shook hands, you know, and he says, you know, I've got Parkinson's and my hands don't move that fast. So then I told him when I was 7, I got sent to my room in August and had the ball game on, and it was Bob Gibson's no hitter.
Yeah.
And I listened to that entire game. I said, that was incredible. He said, the ninth inning, Oliver So Davalio, Oliver, and Stargell. He said Davalio was a drunk. He used to come to the game. So that was, yeah, he was impressive.
I forgot who tells the story. It might be Costas, who Jack was colorblind.
Yeah.
Right? So he, I guess, came into the office one day, and he's wearing, like, the red blazer and maybe bright orange pants or something.
Yeah.
And everybody's Ooh. Looking at him, and he just says, Carol wasn't home. Like, she used to, I guess, pick out Wait, the color coordination with him.
I didn't realize Mr. Buck was colorblind.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That seems to me, I mean, here's a man who did pro football on television. I would think that would be tough to be able to call sports colorblind because.
Particularly in football when the jerseys are all mixed up.
Yeah. So there's something about, I don't really understand it, but I think green really, you see a lot of things in green. If I'm not, somebody can correct me, but it's not like you see things in black and white.
Right.
It's not just straight up like black and white. It's like green has a, I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm not really sure.
There was a game, you know, on Thursday nights when they first started this Thursday night thing.
Yeah.
And they only did it for like 4 or 5 weeks of the season. They'd have a game on Thursday night. They were playing the color games, and they would put these teams into weird colors. Well, I guess green and red are those two colors that mess with colorblind people.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it was the Jets playing the Patriots, and they were in all green and all red. So it just looked like a bunch of ants moving around for people who were colorblind.
Yeah,
you couldn't see it.
Randy has some color blindness too, and I think he's the one who told me that he had difficulty when it was, I believe, the Steelers and either the Cardinals or Chiefs played a game, and they called it the Condiment Bowl because Steelers were in all yellow.
Yes.
And
mustard.
The other team was
mustard
in all red. Looked like mustard and ketchup. And he was like, I had no idea what was going on.
Yeah. Fortunately, they've gotten away from those weird color games.
Yeah.
I do
the
like
color that, rush.
The color,
color rush games.
I do like that they're doing Thursday night games, though.
Yeah, the last season they were all dogs. I mean, those were just terrible games last year, but they've been pretty good this year.
There's a history of that.
Mm-hmm.
For a while, that was the joke about Thursday night football, that it was always the bad teams. Tomorrow, it's the Chiefs are playing tomorrow. It's their third game in 11 days.
Who are they playing tomorrow?
Is it the Steelers tomorrow?
Somebody look that up.
It is the Steelers.
Our NFL insider. Quick to the punch there.
If Netflix screws this up tomorrow on Christmas.
Oh, like they did.
Yeah. I mean, because
oh
I would imagine there'll be more people tuning in on Christmas to a football game than tuned in to see Mike Tyson and that kid play or fight.
Jake Paul.
Yeah, Jake Paul.
Yeah.
I would
they
have
really,
to think they're going to have more people.
It's amazing when you are the basically. Netflix didn't invent streaming, but they were the first ones to be good at it.
Right.
And how they couldn't even get that fight right?
No. Well, the algorithm, you had to
understand. Here we go.
Well, I'll tell you, I heard that because of the $20 million campaign debt that Kamala Harris had left over from the campaign, that she's going to fight Jake Paul.
Oh, that'd be fun.
I did hear that.
That'd be fun.
Is that what her bill is?
Yeah, $20 million. Yeah.
That's not bad. I would have thought it would have been a lot more.
I have never.
Most losing campaigns nationwide would be far bigger.
I have never run a campaign into a debt, ever.
You haven't?
At any level. I'm very proud of that. Because a lot of these consultants out there, they spend money.
But have you ever been in a situation where you say to the person several weeks in advance, like, this isn't going to go well.
Yep.
And here's how much money you have left.
Yep.
You've got serious decisions you need to make.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I've done that a number of times.
We got cut off. This was Hulsoff for governor in 2008.
Right.
And the Republican Governors Association was, you know, funding and putting money in, running against Jay Nixon. And we won a difficult primary against Sarah Steelman that year. It was costly. And a lot of people didn't think a congressman had never won a gubernatorial primary. In Missouri at that point. And so very happy with ourselves winning this thing. And then about 3.5 weeks out, we had closed the gap from 12 to 7. So I'm feeling, you know.
Going in the right direction.
Yeah. And the Republican Governors Association called and said, we're done. We're done.
Yeah.
And we got, I don't know, $180,000 in the bank or something like that. And so I went to Kenny and I said, you know. So we went had to go dark for like a week and a half, and then come back up at the end. We lost by a lot.
Yeah.
Those are tough.
How easy is it to happen in, for guys who run campaigns? A presidential campaign is obviously a huge machine.
Yeah.
With lots of people involved.
Yeah.
And if you're the candidate, wouldn't it be near, if you're campaigning and also working at the same time, how difficult is it to stay up on what your team is spending, especially when you've got however many people working on it?
Well, a presidential campaign is a business. I mean, all campaigns are a business.
It's a major corporation.
But yeah. And so it's got a very structured, you know, the real role that Karl Rove played in George W. Bush, he was a brain guy. He was an issues guy. He was a message guy. But he really was the comptroller of the thing. And he had a really large direct mail firm at the time that he ran. It did all of, you know, political mail all over the country. And so you've got a CFO, essentially, running that operation.
And on a smaller scale, on the campaigns that John and I would run, I mean, you have to have a person whose sole job is to monitor the budget. Because as a strategist and as a person who's kind of putting it together, you're seeing the opportunities, not necessarily the resources that are in front of you. And so John's played that in campaigns that you and I've done together.
You
played the comptroller role.
Yeah.
I have somebody in my office who plays it, and you've got to watch it. Otherwise, you can find yourself in a bad spot. You can wake up a week before an election with no money, or you know you're going to go into an election and maybe not win and be in debt. And so you got to be eyes wide open, and it's the most important thing you can do. I remember on, I don't know that I've ever talked about this, when I was on Mr. Gephardt's presidential campaign,
yeah.
When we were in Iowa. We knew about 6 days before the election it wasn't going to happen. You know what I mean? As we were coming towards the caucuses, we could see the trends that were moving and stuff. And
that was a Howard Dean win.
Yeah, that was the Howard Dean election.
Yeah.
Actually, it wasn't Howard Dean. It was John Kerry who won, and John Edwards came in second. Howard Dean came in third.
Oh, that's right. Yes.
And Dick Gephardt came in fourth. And the expected race 2 weeks before that was flipped.
Yeah.
Dick Gephardt in one, Howard Dean in two. But anyway, we knew 5 or 6 days ahead of time. And I remember we would sit in the car and have these conversations about, hey, we've still got a nut to cover here in terms of, you know, raising some money, et cetera. And that is not fun to know what's going to happen before it happens.
Yep, it certainly isn't. And it's kind of like this, because we have no idea what's about to happen after this short break on The Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
It's the Hancock and Kelly Show on the DGS. We're going to take you all the way up till the news at 5 o'clock,
yeah.
And then off to Christmas. In studio with us is John Hancock Jr. Welcome.
Hey, how's it going?
And, of course, Chris Ranji's sticking around. That's awfully kind of you on your holiday to spend some
time
with us.
You guys, you're with us every Friday.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not this
Friday. For like 46. What the hell?
Well, Michael's going to be gone. I'll be with you.
Where are you going?
Man. I got to go with my mom to Florida and check on some things down there.
Okay.
Can you blame me?
No. You got to do stuff around.
It's nice weather.
I don't want nice weather now.
Oh, really?
Brad and I, we forgot to get to this on the air, but I don't like when it's 50 degrees
on Christmas
week.
Yeah, don't either.
I'm kind of with you. I'm with you.
It's stupid.
We hardly ever have snow anymore on Christmas.
Right.
It sucks.
It does.
I went walking today in the park, Chris, right across from where you and I live.
Yeah.
And there was nobody in the park. I mean, it was absolutely empty. And it wasn't that bad. I mean, usually around Christmas time, I'm wrapped up and have to have a scarf on and 8 different things. And I look like the little kid from The Christmas Story.
Yeah. Randy.
Not today, man. I was fine. Huh. Will you watch that movie, The Christmas Story?
Yeah, because they do doesn't TNT or TBS still do the 24 hours? Yeah. And I think they both do, right? And then they stagger them?
I don't know. I'm not an expert on it. I don't think I've ever seen The Christmas Story.
What?
I don't think I have. I know about it. And the little radio flyer wagon and stuff. I mean, but I've probably seen snippets of it over the years. But I don't think I have ever purposefully sat down and watched
That's great.
Hold
on. Love it.
Really?
Is there a wagon in that movie?
No, it's a BB gun.
Well, there you go.
But you had it.
I was like, what wagon are you talking about?
This is a guy who thinks that Jingle All the Way is the best Christmas
show. Be watching that this evening.
Well, I was going to ask if that tradition had started, happened yet.
Oh, no. Tonight, I think we're going to crank that puppy up It's just a great movie.
It's a good movie, but it does get old year after year.
I feel like there's a little family rift.
Huh? You don't like Jingle All the Way?
It's a great movie, but annually it's a bit much. I think once every 3 years, great spot, keeps it fresh.
Huh.
So, John, an erosion of the tradition, is that what
John,
you're advocating?
It took this.
Do you just
all
took
these years? I thought my children were ever bit as enjoying this ever bit as much
do
as
you
I
realize?
Apparently, that's not the case.
You have just taken a dagger to your father's heart.
He talks about this movie
all the time and how much he can't wait to watch it with all of you.
Yes.
And you're now breaking the news that you don't like it that much.
So I do like it, but you know the important thing is that we watch it together. I got to try to salvage this one.
This man's backtracking.
He's good, though.
Well, when you,
does he know his way back?
Yeah. I mean, who doesn't just get overwhelmed by the acting abilities of one Sinbad?
I love Sinbad.
The guy's incredible in this movie. Oh. I mean, the fact that he wasn't nominated for an Academy Award in this movie.
Is he the postal employee?
Yes.
What about Schwarzenegger? He's the actual toy that everybody wants, right?
He's out to acquire. They're both out to acquire the Turbo Man doll.
But
Arnold's dad
dresses the tie as the toy.
That's right.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, it's a spoiler alert. Believe it or not, there may be somebody out there that's not seen Jingle All the Way.
God bless him.
Spoil the movie.
I have not seen Jingle All the Way.
Well, you got to watch it.
Yeah.
Let me suggest.
Well, the last movie you have recommended movies to me in the past because John had never seen The Godfather until very recently.
Mm. Yep.
But he had recommended The Sting to me, which of course is
great movie.
Robert Redford and Paul Newman.
Yeah.
And it's got the Sting from.
Scott Joplin's score that did win an Academy Award.
And so I saw that movie. He recommended it. It was a great movie. It was an old-time movie I would not have seen had it not come from my best pal.
Well, it came out in 73. It's not, but it
feels like it's older than that.
Well, it's set in the 30s.
Yeah.
So, it came out in 73.
Yes, but I'm not a guy. I haven't seen Gone with the Wind and Casablanca and all that stuff. So the Sting's like as old as it gets for me when it comes to that kind of old-timey movie.
Oh, man. Well, you've seen The Wizard of Oz, surely.
Yeah, but I mean, they play that, you know, all the time.
You know, the people that got injured in the making of that movie, it was incredible. The Wicked Witch got the green paint that burned her face.
I did not know that.
In the hospital for weeks. They had to stop
shooting.
What
did they use?
Something bad. And then the poor Scarecrow, the Tin Man, he got some kind of metal poisoning.
I didn't know about this.
Yeah, there was a lot of heartache making that movie.
I think
Rocchio knows.
The type of paint they used to cover the Tin Man was extremely toxic, and it actually gave him a really bad disease, a really bad sickness because of the paint they used for him. It's crazy.
Did he recover from it?
I don't.
Well, it was one of those things.
Wow.
It didn't kill him, but it didn't make him stronger.
Now,
either.
There was a, wasn't one of the Munchkins
Heartless
from
dude.
Here?
Yes.
One of the actors who played a Munchkin was from St. Louis.
Yes. And Mickey.
Mickey something. Yeah.
Mickey Rourke?
No.
Mickey Rourke.
So the actor who played the Tin Man, Buddy Ebsen, he was hospitalized for 9 days. He spent 2 weeks in the hospital and 4 weeks recovering at home.
Buddy Ebsen from the Beverly Hillbillies?
He suffered long-term breathing issues, and he criticized the film for decades afterwards.
Yeah.
Wow.
Decades after, though.
Buddy Ebsen from the Beverly Hillbillies?
Yes.
Was in...
And, even more famously, perhaps, Barnaby Jones, that great show from the 1970s. You remember that with Lee Meriwether?
No.
One of the great. Find that.
I've
find
heard
that
of it.
Theme song, Rockio, of Barnaby Jones. I'd like to play that.
Was
for
Buddy Ebsen in that?
Yeah, he was. He was.
I had no clue he was
old
the Tin
detective.
Man.
He also Jane Hathaway from the Beverly Hillbillies. Her name was Nancy Culp or something.
Uh-huh.
She ran for Congress in California as a Democrat, and Buddy Ebsen recorded a commercial against her.
Oh, really?
In that campaign.
Oh, wow.
That's some harsh stuff.
Yeah, it was.
You wouldn't do that to one of us, would you, Ron? You wouldn't record a commercial against Hancock or Kelly, would you?
Oh, no, absolutely not.
Yeah, I would. I wouldn't do that.
No, I would actually even consider voting for you if you ran for something, Kelly.
I wasn't old enough to vote for you, but had I been able to.
96, yeah, you were.
Oh, then I
96, I'm sure you voted against me.
Yeah, I did vote against you. I didn't know who you were.
Right, exactly.
If I would have voted in 96, or if I was in Missouri, I would have voted for John.
How about that?
Yeah,
Chris Ranji. And the news is coming up right around the corner. I think Michael Calhoun is the bearer of news today. And when we come back, more of this deep and detailed conversation on KMOX. Never heard this one.
Ditto. Kind of sexy. Can you bring me some right?
Merry Christmas, everybody. It's
Merry
Christmas.
Hancock and Kelly.
Yeah.
Hey, normally on Christmas Day, Chris Ranji's here, John Hancock Jr. is here. Normally on Christmas Day, what we would have on the background was NBA basketball. Not because there were any NBA friends, but fans, but because it was the live television that was on.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we have NFL this week, but it got me to thinking, have you guys been paying attention to what's going on with the NBA?
No.
Their ratings are gone. Like, overnight, they've lost their ratings to the point where LeBron, every city he's going to, is being interviewed with, you know, what's happening to basketball, people aren't watching it, blah, blah, blah.
What's the explanation?
I think it's too many options, and I don't know. I mean, football's on right now.
Yeah, a lot of it is, and I know there's this, the NBA's too woke. It's been the same for however long. It's not that. I think a lot of it does have to do with the load management stuff, because players are, they know how much they can play throughout the year to keep themselves fresh for the playoffs. And that's all they care about. That's all these teams care about, is making sure they're good and fresh when the postseason rolls around. So they're not playing certain games. They're sitting. They're playing for a half. They're not playing the same amount of minutes. And people have started to feel like the regular season means,
it's meaningless.
It's like these guys, I mean, you go to a regular season game, and LeBron's not going to play, or, you know, I mean, Steph is pretty good about playing.
Steph Curry had 2 points the other night.
Yeah, he's getting up there.
Yeah.
But still, you know, you have these guys who are just, and I get it, I understand why they want to, because their money is really made by winning in the playoffs.
It's when I
That's
watch.
When your name, yeah. So I think that has a ton to do with it. Also, the game is a little bit different now than it used to be, and I don't think the just chucking up threes, which is such a big part of the game now, is appealing to everybody. To me, it's a lot like baseball became for a long time, or what they call it, the three true outcome game, where there was either strikeout, walk, or home run. And for years, that's all it was, because teams and hitters realized that the best way to win and the best way to score runs is to get on base. So that meant you're looking for walks. And if you weren't looking for walks, you're trying to hit home runs. So stealing bases, hit and run, all that stuff wasn't as big a part of the game as it used to be. Well, home runs are great, but it's not an exciting product to watch if guys are just going up there looking to hit draw a walk or hit a home run. You want to see action. You want to see movement. You want to see stolen bases. You want to see hit and run. And I think a very similar thing is happening in the NBA, where guys are just throwing up 25-foot threes.
Threes and dunks.
Yep. Yeah.
They're making them, but there's not as much inside game as there used to be. It just isn't as appealing of a product as it used to be.
And I think the star power has gone down a lot. I mean, you had LeBron carrying.
LeBron's getting old.
For 20 years. He's getting old.
Steph's getting old.
Durant's getting old.
Yep.
Look at the young guys. It's all these international players who are really carrying the torch. Jokic, Doncic, Giannis with the Bucks, all from Europe. They don't speak the best English, not as marketable as the stars they've had in the past.
Huh. Well, I am a NBA playoff fan, and I'm not really – I mean, I know the big-name players, et cetera, but I watch when the playoffs start. It's exciting to me because when I do occasionally catch a game now – I don't feel like there's any defense in the NBA.
Yeah, that's true.
There's less than there used to be.
And in the playoffs, but, I mean, I want to, these guys truly are freaks of nature.
Yeah,
they
are.
How big they are, and how I want to see them do their thing. I don't want to see them just stand there and walk back and forth.
Is basketball, because I just don't follow basketball, is the difference between the regular season and the postseason in basketball as stark as it is in the National Hockey League? Yes.
Oh, it's much.
Really?
Yeah. It's just a very different. It seems a lot more relaxed in the regular season because, again, guys are trying to stay healthy, and it, you know, a lot of times the scheduling isn't in their favor. They'll play back to back nights, and you know the NBA screws with them in that regard. So they're trying to be as good as they could possibly be, and they want to be as healthy as possible when it's time for the playoffs.
Yeah, I just contend, I don't think there's a more dramatic sport to watch than playoff hockey. I find it, every minute of it so compelling. And you're hanging on, are they going to score here? How are they going to? And just the nature of that playoff, you know, four rounds of best of seven, and the physical nature of it and the stuff that these guys play through is remarkable.
There's not a ton of stoppage.
Right.
That's why hockey is exciting for people, because, you know, unless the puck goes out of play or there's a penalty or, you know, goalie grabs the puck and holds on to it, they don't stop. They don't stop the substitute.
Right.
Game keeps going. So it's just a very different
kind of
sport.
It's my favorite sport to go to, hands down, more than baseball, especially more than football. Football's terrible to go to in person. But hockey, man, that's the best sport. I mean, yeah. It's the other thing I like about hockey is it's a finite amount of time. You know when you're going to be done in a hockey game. It's not like a basketball game, in particular a football game that can stretch them out forever.
Tell you what, though, a really good NBA playoff game is great.
Yeah.
It's, dude, I mean, the atmosphere in the building for one of those is remarkable.
Is this moment for the NBA their Major League Baseball moment? Like, they're trying to figure out what they're going to be when they grow up. The sport's changing. The way people want to watch it's changing. They may have to start changing the game. Like we've seen baseball change the game?
Maybe. Honestly, I'm not sure what they could do. I'm certain there are things they've probably already thought of, but I don't know what you could do to get people more interested other than building more stars. And then maybe, and I don't even know how you would legislate it, but to change the game from, you know, a straight three-pointer long-distance game to a more short-range game, you know, guys backing in the post and a lot of, you know, post play stuff like that. I don't know how you legislate it and make it happen, but you have to incentivize that. That's why baseball did what it did, like with the shift. So they've gotten rid of, you know, you being able to put all of your defenders on the right side of the infield because the guy pulls the ball all the time, the lefty pulls the ball. They got rid of that because they want there to be more action in the game. Again, I'm not smart enough to know what the NBA should do to create that, but I think that's what their issue is, or it's one of their big issues.
Yeah, and you look at the young stars, there just aren't that many that casual fans know, casual sports
Anthony
fans.
Anthony Edwards,
John Moran.
Yeah.
But then Caitlin Clark, you look at her, and everyone in America knows who she is, and the NBA doesn't have any homegrown star coming up.
I think that does matter, that you don't have a ton of American talent. I don't think it's everything, but I think it's something. I think it does matter to some people.
No.
Well, I don't know.
Tatum won a championship last year.
Yeah, Jason Tatum.
Best player on a championship team from St. Louis.
I don't know what kind of national star he is. If you follow basketball,
he's pretty big.
Well, if you follow basketball, you know who he is.
He might be listening right now in town for Christmas.
Hey, hope he is.
I'm sure they're playing on Christmas Day.
Really bringing
that's an excellent
really
point.
Bringing the age down in our demo if he is. But I think I don't hope so. But I do think that if again, everybody in the country knows who LeBron is. I think almost everybody knows who Steph Curry is. I'm not sure Tatum is there yet, but if you follow sports, you certainly know who he is.
I went to my first NBA game this year. I went out to, or this past season, I went to Denver and saw the Nuggets play. And
Denver
they've
Nuggets.
Got, is his name Jokic?
Yeah.
Jokic. The guy's insane. He's just unbelievable.
Yeah.
And he's a freak in nature. I mean, he's big amongst all of those people, which are ridiculously large. But there wasn't that was an exciting sport to be at. It was as entertaining as a hockey game in terms of the action that was going on, etc. So I don't know. If we had a team, I would probably go to more games.
Well, of course, for sure. Of course. The Denver Nuggets, I believe, were part of the old American Basketball Association, the ABA.
Well, they might have been.
They were.
Dan Issel. Yeah.
The thing about the NBA games that I don't think people, if you've never been to one, that you don't really get, they're playing music throughout the entire game.
Right.
Like
hockey,
it stops and it's got to get shut down while the game's open. It never stops in an NBA game, and I really do think that makes even regular season games really fun to go to compared to other sports, because the livelihood and the atmosphere is 100% of the
time. What kind of music are they playing?
Pretty much, beats or whatever.
I don't think
Barbara
Ann from the Beach Boys.
Yeah, not a lot.
I'll tell you what. So when I was working with the White Sox, I don't know how many teams do this, but I don't think a lot of baseball teams do. They don't do it at Cardinals games, I don't think. If they do, I've tuned it out. But they would make sure they play between every single pitch. They would play some kind of like 4 or 5 seconds of music. Every single pitch, or like a clapping sound, or
would it be the organ
something,
or canned music?
Canned music. It would. There's some sort of sound effect they are playing between every single pitch, and it's because, well, you know, the games weren't all that exciting themselves, so they had to create it. They had to create energy in the building. I don't think a lot of baseball teams do that. But what Rocchio's talking about with the NBA, they're doing it. While the guys are running down the floor with the ball.
That's fascinating.
You want to get excitement to a Cardinal game, you need to go with John Hancock, Ronj. I'm going to give you my seats one day.
Does he yell at the umpires?
Oh, I'm going to send just the two of you to the game, and I'll come back and give us a full report on how it was.
Why? What does he do?
He sits in the stands and calls play-by-play as if he's Jack Buck and Mike Shannon, and everybody in 4 or 5 rows around us has to listen to him.
They love it. People,
you know, make up stats about, you know, this is Billy Miller. He's from Turtleneck, Arkansas.
Bill Miller led the American League in hitting at St. Louis.
He's making
His father had a cup of coffee with the New York Giants back in the day, and he was my substitute eighth grade biology teacher.
His dad?
Yes. Who was also a major league ball player.
But, I mean, this goes on for 3 or 4 innings. Yeah. One time at a game, the very
it's
large
like
man
Scully.
Who sits in front of me, he finally had enough of John calling the game and turned around, and I thought, oh, boy. Here it goes. We're going to have the fight now. He's like, will you shut up? And John goes, oh, you don't want me to do the play-by-play anymore?
The guy was an idiot. people can love it out there.
He used to do that at all my Little League games, too.
Oh, man.
Really? Yeah. Like, could you hear it on the...
You could hear it. And I was a contact hitter with no speed, so he didn't have much to say about me.
But the great thing about that was Wayne Hagen's kid was on that team.
Wayne Hagen,
so Wayne would,
Cardinals announcer.
Yeah, he was
for a
Cardinal
minute.
for a season or two anyway.
But then you go with him, and he'll bust it out on some sweet little gal, older lady who's sitting next to you, and then he's got a fan and an audience member. That's when you get the pure genius of John Hancock's play-by-play.
Well, I mean,
they'll be like,
I do
want
to experience
is
this.
Is he really from Turtleneck, Arkansas? He'll be like, yes, ma'am. Graduated senior 3 letters, 3 varsity letters on that.
All right, we need to step aside, if only for a while. It's the DGS right here on KMOX.
It's the DGS on KMOX. It's Hancock and Kelly. Chris Ronji sitting in with us till the top of the hour. John Hancock Jr. in studio. You brought up the Wizard of Oz earlier,
yes.
And it all starts with a tornado.
It does.
Yeah, has ever been in a tornado or a hurricane?
I have.
You have?
I have. I've seen a funnel cloud in my life.
Where?
In Berkeley, when I was a little kid growing up.
Uh-huh.
There was a tornado. It didn't touch down.
Was that close to where the Carroll House?
Yeah,
it wasn't
far from Carroll House. Yeah, they always get hit.
Uh-huh.
And then John and I landed. We were flying home from Columbus, Ohio, and. It was a tornado touching down at Lambert.
Wow.
While our plane was landing. Remember that?
Yeah, that was a tough landing, but, you know, made it down safely. All you can ask for.
Yeah.
Did everybody rush off the plane?
Yeah, it was, I think they wanted us to leave our stuff on the plane.
Yeah, the pilot got applause, which I'm usually not a fan of at all, but you know, I allowed it this time. I let him.
You allowed it. Yeah, well, thank you.
Yes.
I'm magnanimous. You been in one?
No, I think I drove under a funnel cloud once, but never actually seen
I've
one.
Hit in the basement and stuff.
Right.
I remember seeing them in the distance when I was a kid out on the river. I lived on a hill in St. Charles, and so way out there you could see the Mississippi River. And I remember them passing by. My parents would point them out. But every time I see a hurricane on TV and I see Al Roker down there, like, standing in it, I want to go do it. I want to feel
I do
what
too.
It, I want to feel
really?
What that wind feels. I don't know that I'd want to deal with a tornado at all.
No.
But I would love to maybe experience a hurricane if I knew I could be safe.
Yeah.
Well, you can't.
Or somewhat safe.
You can't know you're
somewhat
safe.
I mean, the weather people do it every time. They stay safe. I mean, they just get pelted for a few minutes and then.
Yeah, they're fine. Yeah.
Are you curious about it, too?
Yeah.
I think it'd be fun. Like, I would want to see if I could, like, literally push my weight into it and stay afloat.
Never crossed my mind.
Really?
No. I'll tell you what does cross my mind are funnel cakes.
Funnel cakes?
Yeah.
Well, that just goes right hand in hand with hurricanes
and
tornadoes.
I mean, you're talking about the clouds, and I'm talking about the cakes. Uh-huh. So the funnel cake is, you know, you've got the powdered sugar on top.
Yeah.
If they're cooked just right, and I believe the best funnel cakes in America can be found at Silver Dollar City down in Branson.
No, never been.
You've never been to Silver Dollar City?
I haven't either.
Never been. Oh, come on.
Neither, no.
Never
you,
been.
You guys, you, neither one of you are married.
No. Hmm. Well, I mean, I'm not into woodworking that's the either, connection. Isn't it? Like an old time.
Well, you,
like...
you take the kids to, we took John to Silver Dollar City when he was two.
Yeah.
And put him out on one of these little boats in the... in a little pond of water, and he fell asleep.
You couldn't get him back?
No, I fell asleep in the middle. But this was a Donald Trump-esque weave here. We were talking about tornadoes and funnels, and he just pivots to funnel cakes. Doesn't miss a beat.
Well you got to go what you know. Yeah. With what you know. But
doesn't a funnel cake sound really good right now?
I guess, but I don't know that I've ever had a really good cooked one or a bad cooked one. Aren't they all the same? They're just fried.
No, you can cook them too long, and it ruins the effect. Now, I will say... they don't put off the most pleasant aroma, the funnel cake. I guess it's because of the frying grease or whatever.
Maybe. That means they're not cleaning the grease.
That's what it
they're
means.
Not getting new grease in there, new
you
oil.
Know, the galleons like that. We go shoot where we play snooker at the Pink Galleon. I don't know that they clean that grease very often.
Careful.
It's a wonderful place.
Yeah.
Great place. They just need to change the oil every now and then.
I've never done that either. Change the oil in a fryer. Have you guys?
I have not.
Yeah.
I worked in a bar in the kitchen for a minute, so yeah, I've
change
done it.
Change the oil?
Yeah.
Did you put it into the...
I forgot how you do it.
You're cooking? Well, you were cooking in the kitchen?
Yeah. I worked for a few months at this bar called Hurricanes in Collinsville.
Yeah?
And I worked in the kitchen.
What'd you make? What was your specialty?
Like hot wings and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All of it fried?
Yeah. There were tacos. There was a taco night.
Uh-huh.
I made the tacos.
How about
I can make
Ryan?
A good taco salad.
Is that right?
Oh, man, I crushed it.
Wow.
That was very good.
Now, do you cook for yourself?
Yeah, I mean, not. It's more difficult to do that because if you do, you have to make a lot of food.
I got three bachelors sitting here. So, all right, how many nights a week do you cook for yourself, Ron?
I will make something at home probably three nights, four nights.
Okay, so Michael? Let's define that. Does make something at home mean the microwave?
No.
Does it mean actually cooking stuff?
Yeah, like, yeah, you know, just it. Look, I'm not.
I'm going to be honest. Less than once a week.
Less than once a week.
It doesn't taste good to anybody else. It wouldn't.
Uh-huh.
The stuff I make, it'd be bland.
Yeah.
Because I don't add a lot of salt. I don't do all that. Yeah. I just don't. But I feel like it's good to me. Because I've made it.
Yeah.
So when I'm shoveling my own food into my own mouth, this is great. But I know if I gave it to somebody else, they'd be like, what is this?
All right.
Right?
So I just buy the pre-seasoned like chicken breast at Whole Foods.
I've done that too.
And then, yeah, you throw them in the oven. You don't have to worry about seasoning.
It's great.
So that's what I consider cooking right now. Now, I did make pasta the other day, handmade it, you know, with the rolling pin and the whole bit.
Wow.
I learned how to do it in Italy, and I thought, you know, this is something I ought to do a couple of times so that I remember how to do it. And so, in fact, I may do it tonight. I don't have anything going on tonight. Maybe I'll make pasta. But anyway, so I do it that, but it's rare, John. Maybe once every 2 weeks I'll cook.
What are you putting the pasta?
So, what's the name of that cheese? It's kind of like
American? Swiss? Cheddar?
It's got a C name, but you get this cheese, and I put some lemon zest, some garlic in there, etc. You just do the pasta.
Cottage.
No, it's not.
Cottage
it's
cheese.
C something, or it's not.
There's something wrong with cottage cheese.
There's a lot wrong with it.
Yeah.
It's gross.
It is disgusting, and people eat it.
Yeah, they eat it.
But it's it doesn't look like something that ought to be consumed to me.
I don't get it.
Isn't it curdled milk? Isn't that what it is?
Basically,
I don't like to think about it.
That just sounds gross.
Exactly.
Did you guys ever remember the story? What was the comedian, the seven dirtiest words? George Carlin. Used to say the bravest man in the world was the guy who looked at a cow and said, I think I'm going to drink what's coming out of that thing.
Well, that's an excellent point.
By the way, they're having to tell people not to drink the raw milk because now there's a raw milk thing. Don't drink raw milk. It is so bad for you.
Yeah.
It's so bad.
Well, and that French guy, you know, where would we all be without him?
Louis Pasteur?
Yeah.
Yeah.
How did they do it back in the day? I mean, when they milked
They just
milk.
Died.
Yeah, they just died.
They just drank it. Like, I don't know what happened, but I died.
Well, people didn't live that long back then.
Yeah. You lived to 30.
Yeah.
30 was a good life.
Yeah. And now, you know, we're living longer and longer all the time.
That's right.
Ronch, Merry Christmas to you, buddy.
Hey, Merry Christmas, guys.
This was nice of you to spend an hour with us, and I hope you have a good time. You going to spend time with your mom?
Of course. No. Yeah, no. I'm just going to ignore her for the next 2 days.
I didn't know she was maybe out of town or on a cruise or something.
That would be funny if she just said, you know what? Peace. I'm leaving.
That's Chris Raji, John Hancock, and Michael Kelly. When we come back, the incoming governor of Missouri is going to join us on this Christmas Eve, Mike Kehoe. Find out what he and his family are up to this year. That's next on Camo X.